Good morning. It's Thursday, July 24th, 2014. My name is Chris, and this is Tech Talk Today, episode 32. And this July 24th, if we step in the Tech Talk Today Wayback Machine and celebrate a little tech history, on July 24th, 1969, Apollo 11 arrived safely in the Pacific Ocean, ending the first manned mission to land on the moon. How about that? That's a little history for you. And something a little closer to home, in 2013, Google announced the Chromecast. Yeah, that $35 HDMI stick powered by USB that streamed video from the internet and, you know, your other devices to your TV. Not too long ago, just in 2003. Bit of a difference there in significance, but still interesting nonetheless. We got a big show today. We're going to follow up on a story that I ran with on Monday first. That'll be our Out of Our Gate story. And joining me is a really great group of folks from the Mumble Room who are going to toss around the stories in Mumble Room as always. If you're thinking of something as we go, it's like this is like a morning call-in show, and you're my caller, so just speak up, and I'll give you the right of way, because sometimes there's a little bit of a lag thing, and chime in with your thoughts. Let me start with our first story. It's a follow-up on the iOS backdoor story we covered on Monday. You'll remember earlier this week, a forensic expert, Jonathan Zardensky, attracted a lot of attention for disclosures of what appeared to be backdoors in iOS that could allow for covert data collection of users' information from their devices. While Apple issued a statement denying that anything nefarious was involved, the company has now posted a new support document, which is pretty bare bones, offering a limited description of these services that the security analyst found. Now, here's what Apple has said. They wrote each, and this is, and they also outline what they say each of these do, but they say all overall in whole. Each of these diagnostic capabilities requires the user to have unlocked their device and agreed to trust another computer. Any data transmitted between the iOS device and trusted computer is encrypted with keys not shared with Apple. For users who have enabled iTunes Wi-Fi sync on a trusted computer, these services may be also accessed wirelessly by that same computer. So that's the condition in which one of the assumptions here was you might be able to do this over the Wi-Fi, and this is why. The other reason you might is if you have an enterprise-managed iPhone device and they have turned on remote management in that capability, it does give them an enormous amount of access. So here's what Apple says these backdoor services do. Remember, we had a packet capture backdoor, we had a file relay backdoor, which allowed basically somebody to suck everything off the iPhone, even bypassing encryption, because it has a little baggie. That's what they call it, a little bag on the side with keys in it that it can decrypt the data for you while you're pulling it off. And then there was the house arrest, which was also similar to that. And Apple has outlined what the house arrest, the PCAP, and the file relay backdoor services do. And they don't say they're backdoor services. They say these processes are mostly diagnostic services. For example, the PCAP-D, which is the packet capture daemon, diagnostics. It's a diagnostic packet capture to trusted computers. It's used for diagnosing app issues and enterprise VPN connection problems. And it has to be, again, they say, with a trusted computer. The file relay daemon, that's used on internal devices and can be accessed with user permission by AppleCare for diagnostic purposes on the user's device. Now, when they say with user's permission, they mean verbal permission, okay? They don't mean like you get prompted on the device and you get to decline the transfer. They mean the AppleCare person says, is it okay if I pull all the data off your phone? And then house_arrest, used by iTunes for document transfer by Xcode during app development, which actually Jonathan did actually agree in his talk. He said that's what it's used for. But the point is it could also be used for other things. In fact, that's sort of the crux of the entire thing. Jonathan did, after Apple released their statement. He said, Apple is being completely misleading by claiming that the file relay is only for copying diagnostic data. If by diagnostic data... What's that? Okay. If by diagnostic data you mean claiming the file relay is only for copying diagnostic data, you mean that's like complete photo albums, SMS notes, address book, geolocation data, screenshots of the last thing they were looking at, and a ton of other personal data, then sure. But this data is far too personal in nature to be ever needed for diagnostics. In fact, the diagnostic is almost the complete opposite of this kind of data. And once again, the user is never prompted to give their permission to dump all of this data or notified in any way on screen. This is, again, a quote from the researcher who found these backdoor services. He goes on to say, Apple insists AppleCare gets your consent. This has to be a verbal consent because there's no technological consent. And what's more, even if the services really were just for diagnostic use, you think it would respect backup encryption, so everything coming off the phone is encrypted with the user's backup password. He gives Apple, though, credit for acknowledging these services and trying to explain them. But he goes on to point out that if he really wonders if the Apple executives are aware of how open this is and how exploited this could be by nefarious governments, nefarious attackers, etc., law enforcement abused, so on and so forth. So Apple's come out and said, no, look, those are there. Here's a document about them. Sorry we didn't document them before. We were going to get around to it. We just didn't have any documents on it. I guess there were actually some developer docs, but nothing that was cohesive. And don't worry about it. Just trust us. So Mumble Room, do you think this is a sufficient answer now that we've seen these backdoor services like packet capture, transferring files, even when they're encrypted? Is there legitimate tech support purposes? Is Apple being overbearing here and saying, well, when our customers need help, we're just going to take it all and just solve it for them because that's Apple and we want to just solve all of the problems. Is that what's at play here? They've overreached on that end? Or is this one of those, oh, oops, you caught us and now we're going to fix it? Because let's rewind the clock here. Now we're starting to see a pattern. First, it was they had a flaw where the iOS devices would accept any certificate, whether it was self-signed or not. It wasn't validating it. Then we had, before that, we had the Wi-Fi database that was collecting every cellular tower and every Wi-Fi AP your phone ever saw indefinitely in a SQLite database. Oh, sorry, they say, that was a bug. We meant to trim that. Okay, when that one first came out, I was like, okay, that's legit. Somebody wrote this thing to store it to a database and never wrote the code to go clean it up. I could totally see somebody forgetting to write the cleanup code. You know, people make lazy mistakes all the time. And then you had the SSL thing. I was like, okay, well, maybe the NSA did that and Apple didn't know, but maybe not. Maybe it was like they were just kind of being sneaky and giving them a really easy way to sort of hijack users' data. Maybe not. And now we have this, a three services that essentially work together to give you all of the users' information off their phone and to watch all of their data transfer. Legitimately, that would be useful for troubleshooting. I have done packet capture in IT before. I don't know, Mumble Room. Anybody in here feel like this is a little too...
unacceptable?
Yeah, a little too hard to believe?
Yeah, it's unacceptable in my mind. I've actually got an iPhone, and yeah, it doesn't surprise me that they've done this, but at the same time, it is unacceptable.
It doesn't seem too bad because you need certain permissions already. Like, I can definitely see why they put them in there, but right.
That is
in
a good
order,
point.
They didn't lock it down enough.
I think this is something that kind of got lost in all of this, is it'll only do it to a computer that's been trusted. And on iOS, you plug it in, and then iTunes comes up and says, hey, this is a new computer. And then on the phone, it asks you, do you trust this computer? And you have to say yes or no on the phone, or the iPad, I suppose. And a lot of these things, in fact, I don't think any of these things work unless you do that, or if you have a provision phone from an enterprise and they have used the Apple Enterprise Management software to enable that stuff. So that is a huge barrier. So that means this is almost completely unusable by any drive-by attacker. But really what this is, I think the most realistic exploitation of this outside of actual legitimate tech support issues is law enforcement grabbing it. They take your phone, they plug it into a computer, they'll have your phone there with them, and they can just say yes to that prompt, and then they have access to everything. And that's why one of the things Apple said is make sure you have a strong password, because if you have to enter the password before you can trust a computer. So even if they have your device, if it's password protected, they have to enter that password before they can trust it. But a lot of people don't use. In fact, I think Apple released a stat and they said over 50% of iPhone users don't use a passcode. So over 50% of the users aren't going to be protected if law enforcement were to grab this. Now, you say that, okay, Chris, now you're sounding crazy. Actually, if you do a little reading up, you'll find there's been several lawsuits around law enforcement taking phones even during traffic stops and doing downloads of phone data. There was actually just a recent case about this because law enforcement says, well, there could be information on there that could harm me that I need to know about immediately. So I have to download that before I have time for a warrant. So they're using personal safety as a justification for immediate download of phone contents. And
I'm going to say,
well, maybe, I mean, that's starting to get into the bacon territory. But what I just said has happened, and there's been lawsuits about it, and there's been court cases about it. That's the thing that's going on in the country right now. That's why these services being available are actually exploitable, not just by Apple. So at the end of the day, regardless of what Apple's motivation is, these things have to be cleaned up. Now what we got to wait and see is, are we going to see an iOS 8? Maybe some of these patches will just, or some of these things will just change, and they'll never say anything. Maybe. Hey, let's get off the Apple story. If you guys want to read the researcher's response, we got more in the show notes. You can click the links and all that. The UK government has officially adopted the open document format. Huge story. This is great news. This is, like, this isn't just good news for technology. This is great news for, like, people. And, like, history. This is so huge. And what's really great is since we were just at OSCON, we actually had a chance to chat with the LibreOffice Foundation, and we got their thoughts on the UK government adopting ODF and why it's a great, great bit of news. So let's play that interview right now.
OSCON 2014, walking around the room, and we came over to the LibreOffice where Italo is kind enough to stop and talk with us. One of my absolute favorite open source projects, because this is something I use on a daily basis. How are you doing today, sir?
Fine. It's really exciting to be here and to see so many people interested in LibreOffice.
Man, I tell you, I've seen a lot of projects that I recognize, a lot of companies that I have an affiliation with, but LibreOffice is literally not a day goes by that I don't have at least some application of LibreOffice open the majority of the time when I'm sitting in front of my computer, right? Now, I understand that there are some almost could be considered breaking news that happened with for LibreOffice today.
Yes. Actually, I don't think it's only for us, although we are one of the leader in this area, but it's breaking news for everyone interested in working with documents. Actually, the UK government has standardized on open document format. Open document format is not only the native format of LibreOffice, is a open format for documents that allow everyone to get complete freedom of its contents. So if you produce a document and you save it in open document format, it will be possible to open that document with dozens, if not hundreds, of applications, which means that you are not tied into a single software. And this is real freedom. This is what we have been fighting for over 8 years now, because the ODF standard was born in 2006. And I think it's really great news, and it's something that will allow us to go to other governments and say, if the UK government is able to standardize on that, you should look at their documents, you should look at their reasons, and do the same, because this is an advantage for all the citizens, and a government should look at the citizens before it looks at any business.
Right, and that doesn't even touch on the cost effectiveness of having a document.
It's a really great point too. I think this is why I'm so excited about this particular story, is because I think this is particularly good for citizens and access to the documents their government creates, the documents they pay for, and then down the road, when the proprietary applications are no longer available for these formats, ODF will still be going strong. And so I would love to see this just spread. Maybe it will now. I think this is just great news in general. We're going to talk more about this on the Linux Action Show. And as you probably guessed, we've got more in that interview. The next question that Noah was about to ask was about collaborative editing a la Google Docs style in LibreOffice. And we'll get the answer to that. I know, right? I know. We'll get the answer to that in the Linux Action Show. I'll play that part of the interview. So stay tuned for that. Hey, before we go on, I want to mention you can support the Jupiter Broadcasting Network and help us do events like OSCON and go down and talk to the people that are making the news and working with this project and help us bring more relevant coverage to you. Your support over at patreon.com/today help pay for our trip down to OSCON. So thank you to our patrons. And if you would like to invest in the Jupiter Broadcasting Network, help us keep it weird, stay independent, patreon.com/today. 270 patrons. Man, wouldn't it be awesome if by next Thursday we could get that thing up to 280? And now that I'm back, I'm going to start working on that barbecue challenge. So go get in that swag club, because there could be some stuff coming your way. There's also other pledge levels you can jump in at. They give you a bit of a sense of an idea of what your contribution is doing. All of the revenues from the Patreon go to supporting the Jupiter Broadcast Network. It's all invested in JB. And it's just one pledge a month. And it starts, I have a recommendation at $3, but any amount you can afford, more or less, is fine. Patreon.com/today. Thank you, everybody. So did you guys catch that there was a big story? Microsoft announced they're going to unify Windows across all platforms. Convergence. It's a big story. It came out from a conference call with Satya Nadella on the Microsoft Financial Reports. One unified operating system across all devices. OSCON was a buzz with the snorri, and of course followed on the lips after everybody said those words was, oh, by the way, doesn't this sound exactly like what Canonical's been talking about? Even the BBC. Even the BBC points out that this is a lot like what Canonical's been talking about. Here's what the BBC wrote. They said, it does bring Microsoft closer to another OS developer, Canonical, which has promoted the idea of its Ubuntu system powering both phones and desktops. Canonical previously highlighted that one benefit of the strategy was a handset that could double as a low-power desktop PC if it was plugged into a monitor and connected to a mouse. So what Satya Nadella said in his conference call was, let me get my Satya. I got to get stoic, kind of like in a power pose. Okay, picture me in a power pose where I'm kind of going like winning, okay? We will streamline the next version of Windows from the three operating systems into one single converged operating system for screens of all sizes. Wow, that almost sounds exactly like Mark Shuttleworth. And you could see how the tech press, or quote-unquote as it is, would go abuzz. Oh my gosh, Satya Nadella said convergence. Okay, here's actually...
Okay, buzzwords.
Yeah, here's actually what Satya Nadella said. And I'm not trying to say I've been just calling it, but I have so been calling it. Satya Nadella is a poor communicator. It's apparent in the way he writes his memos. They are ridiculous. We all admit that. He now wins the crown for the most ridiculously fluffy corporate writing in the IT sector. Good job, Satya. And what I believe that means is I believe that is an insecurity about how to communicate properly. And so you grandiose it. You make it overdone. Well, I believe his failure to communicate bit him right here. Because what he actually meant was not one single converged OS at all. He didn't mean that. But you see, he's a poor communicator. So later in the conference call, he got passed a note and said, Satya, Twitter is going crazy. They think we're doing convergence. Can you clarify this? And so in the conference call, later in the same conference call, Satya kind of cleared things up. He said... what he really meant was that he's going to have a single team developing all of Windows. This team has been in place since July 2013 when, you guessed it, Ballmer arranged this setup. It's under the Unified Operating System Group, and this team works on the Windows Phone OS, Windows Embedded, Windows for PCs and tablets, and the Xbox One operating systems. It's a group that was already established by Ballmer. It's already in place. It's nothing new. That's what he meant the first time. Then another thing is a single core. What he means by a single core is Windows Phone, Windows 8, Windows RT, and Windows Server are all built on top of the same kernel, the NT kernel. Okay, that's been like that for about a decade now. That's not too new. They call it a layered architecture approach. Each OS will then build on top of this core using different pieces that make sense for the form factor hardware. That's sort of a solidification of an approach they've basically stumbled upon since they launched the Xbox and then Windows Phone. And then the third thing he meant, the unified store and commerce model across all platforms. He made mention of that. I love the unified store and commerce model. Oh, man, I want a commerce model. Microsoft has taken steps towards unifying its Windows Phone Store and Windows Server over the past year, but it still has a way to go to reach the holy grail, one single store that will span all platforms. Yes, kids, they didn't launch with a single store. That would be silly. The next major version of Windows Phone and Windows, both codenamed Threshold, by the way, may be where we see one single store debut, but you won't see that same store on the Xbox. That'll have its own store, which may be added at a later point. And then the last piece, what he meant when he said convergence, he meant a lot, didn't he? Was a unified developer platform. Microsoft execs have been promising for years that one day developers will be able to write once and run on any Windows variant. To get there, Microsoft is working to unify as much as possible the core set of applications and APIs and the developer tooling for building apps for Windows Phone and the Xbox operating system. Pretty much what every platform is doing. Right,
we've making seen how well Windows 8's done.
I mean, really. So what they're doing, the last piece there is a common set of APIs across the mobile form factor and the desktop form factor. Literally every desktop environment is doing that right now. Everyone. So that's none of this is interesting. But it's not a convergent strategy. It's not one singular OS that you can install on all systems. It may be common UIs and common APIs. And to be realistic, that's probably more appropriate. I think it's pie in the sky for one UI for all devices. I think you let developers create the UI that works best on that form factor for a 4-inch screen or a 5-inch screen and for a 30-inch screen. That's what I want on my desktop. and you just let them write to the same API and underline stuff, and then it saves them a ton of time, and they can focus on the UI stuff. So here's his, here once again is sort of his clarification. Word for word, Sace said, our SKU strategy, SKU strategy, will remain by segment. We will have multiple SKUs for enterprise, we will have OEM, and we will have end users. We will be disclosing and talking about our SKUs as we get further along. So they're still going to have multiple versions of Windows, you know, the business, the professional, all of that. It's not going away. So if you read it on Engadget or somewhere, it's bogus. All right, last story of the day. Great news. It's just going to make things easier for the web. I know how some of you feel about H.264, but you might remember the story where Cisco was working with the Mozilla Foundation to get H.264 into Firefox using Cisco's technology. Well, Firefox 33 shipped this week while I was at OSCON, and as promised, version 33 of Firefox will fetch the open H.264 module from Cisco, which enables Firefox to decode and encode H.264 video for WebRTC, HTML5 embedded video. The module won't be a traditional Netscape plugin API. It's a so-called Gecko Media plugin, the GMP for short, Mozilla's answer to the disliked Pepper API. Firefox had no cross-platform H.264 before this. This is huge. This means on Linux now, out of the box, you get Firefox 33. It'll go out. It'll get the H.264 codec. And now your HTML5 videos that don't have a WebM version will work for you. How awesome is that? That's great news. So go get Firefox 33. Awesome. What's that?
It's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, Firefox is getting good, right? We had a chance at OSCON to stop by the Mozilla booth, and we talked to their chief evangelist about Firefox OS. We talked about the open web with him, and we talked about sort of why Mozilla is sort of an open source, open standards first company, and how they kind of had to be coming from Netscape. All of that's in our interview that will air on the Linux Action Show on Sunday. It's going to be a big last. We got a lot of really great interviews. We also we had about a 20-minute talk with Chris DeBona from Google about Google's use of open source, about sort of the closing up of Android and what he thinks about that. And we also just flat out asked him, like, Chris, what do you think about the fact that we're at OSCON and everybody has MacBooks, everybody has iPhones? What do you think about that? And he was very frank. And his answer, when you hear it, will make you smile. You will, I guarantee, love it or hate it, it will make you smile. It was a really great answer. And when he said it, Eric and I looked at each other and was like, wow. So tune in on Sunday to get that one. Yeah, I think there's some other great interviews in there as well. I'm going to wrap it up with, we played a lot of boy-heavy commercials. Commercials that are targeted at boys to play video games. And I got a theme for next week. So I have one commercial I want to wrap us on. That's something for the ladies. Something for the ladies that watch Tech Talk today. I bumped into a few of them at OSCON, shook their hands, and it was great to meet them. So this, unfortunately, ladies, is for you. See you next week, everybody. And don't forget to join me Monday through Thursday for Tech Talk today, jblive.tv, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. Love to have you here. You can join our Mumble Room, techtalktoday.reddit.com for your feedback. Is also the place to go, or go over to jupiterbroadcasting.com/contact. And if you have a moment and have iTunes installed, we could use a review or a rating to help people find us there, too. All right, now, ladies, here is your commercial. See you next week. Don't hate me.
Now, try this new way to accent your figure. Cross your heart, see? You're suddenly shapelier. Well, that's what this new Playtex Fashion Magic cotton bra does. It crosses your heart with stretch to lift and separate. You're suddenly shapelier. This cross-your-heart shaping is only on Playtex regular Fashion Magic bras and new longline styles. Cross your heart. You'll be shapelier, honestly. And here's news about girdles.
Announcing a comfortable way to look 5 pounds thinner. The new 5 pounds thinner girdle by Playtex. Prove it yourself. Fingertips sew. Press in. See? The new Playtex girdle has fingertip panels to hold you in firmly. Yet it's so different. Feels like nothing you've ever felt before. Look 5 pounds thinner without losing a pound. In the new 5 pounds thinner girdle by Playtex.